Well, welcome everybody to episode 70 of the Forever Bristol City podcast. Yeah, and if you hear the phone ringing in the background, that's Ian because he's having technical difficulties this evening trying to get in. He was in for a period and then he dropped out. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on there. I'm going to disconnect him. But joining me at the moment is our Dave Fevs coming back for a final appearance of the season, and Mark. And, well, we didn't expect anything more than the final score of Bristol City 1, Brentford 3, as we normally do in these situations. Let's have a quick 30-second review of the game. Dave, I'll come to you first. What are your thoughts on that 90 minutes?
I guess 90 minutes, disappointing. First 45, kind of really encouraged. Thought we played really well, really disciplined. The danger was we spent a lot of time chasing the ball and probably ran out of steam, and probably halftime wasn't what we wanted. Brentford ran out worthy winners in the end, but lots of little encouraging signs there. And, you know, let's get the season over with. It is over now. And let's start seeing what happens over the next couple of months as we move through close season into pre-season and the start of next season.
Yeah, that's it. Mark, your thoughts on the overall performance and the game? Just a brief overview.
In a duly forgettable season, City failed to lay a glove on a fast pass in Brentford in their final game. The one bright spot being Battered of Britain, who certainly made Mads Sorensen and Sergio Canos aware of his presence and finishing with a final goal.
I like that. That was so spontaneous. You've got auto cue programmed there, haven't you?
What's that?
Not bad. No, that was very spontaneous. Very spontaneous, that was. It's all Ian's rehearsed, or one or the other. Ian's back. Ian is back. Is he back? Auto cue went wrong. Les has said auto cue went wrong.
All right, Les's best comment ever.
My view was that on the game, it was first half, I thought we did all right. And the turning point, as I commented, agreed with somebody on the OTIB, the turning point was Mariappa going off, because when Viner came into the back four, we weren't there. And I think Brentford stepped up a gear as well. Dave, the starting lineup, there were changes. Was it a 4-3-1-2 or I don't know what it is, variations on that theme, but three out of contract players in the back four, but youngsters prevailing in there. I mean, what were your thoughts, Dave, on that starting lineup?
I guess there's a few surprises. I thought Simpson might come back in at right back, but I didn't expect Callas to be left out, and I guess we might debate that a little bit later. So pairing Mariappa and Baker, maybe Viner not quite ready after his knee knock that he had.
That was very quick for a knee op.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I have 3 weeks off for cramp.
I think Semenyo kind of went down late in training as well, hence Palmer came in. So, yeah, there were a few surprises. Good to see Silva back. And I guess, you know, Bentley as captain without Callas as well. That was quite interesting. So, yeah, not a side I was anywhere near.
Talking about Callas, I mean, let's bring that up now. I mean, he wasn't injured. I mean, Naj has gone home on the pretext of having a family funeral, but he's going to be in the Euros. Callas is going to be in the Euros as well. Should we read anything into the exclusion of Callas?
No, I don't think so, Dave. I think, you know, I heard all manner of rumours throughout the afternoon that, you know, he supposedly went through Naki Wells in training, and Pearson said, "I wish you'd have done that last week against Millwall," and he went off in a strop. But the fact that Callas was there at the ground, I think that's just, you know, people being a bit mischievous with rumours. So I would imagine end of season, he's probably put his body on the line for us quite a lot this season, maybe not over the last few weeks. And I think it's, you know, you've got the Euros coming up. We don't want to jeopardise your injury now. And I probably cynically thought that might have been the case with Naj as well, although, you know, it seems to be that he's gone home for a funeral. But
yeah.
Hello there.
He's back in. He's back in. If anybody's reading that, we can hear you now.
Right. Can you hear me, Stockholm?
Eh? Yeah. I mean, oh, dear, dear. Let's welcome Ian back. There we go. Look, there we go. And we give him a slow hand clap as well. There we go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. I'll come to you then. I mean, those who are reading the text, Ian has said, F this for a game of soldiers, I'm off. But he's back in the room, so it does show that
he's still able to.
He is, yeah. I mean, Ian, we get into the detail of the game in a minute, but Dave was just commenting on the starting lineup. Good to see Alex Scott in there. Tommy Conway keeping his place, but recalls for Simpson and Mariappa. A start for Baker and three out of contract players in a over 30 back four, with the exception of De Silva. What were your thoughts when you saw that lineup?
I can understand him giving Simpson a game. I don't like the shape. We can't play 4-2-3-1 because we haven't got any old in midfield players, and Wells can't play on his own. And with a back, and with the three behind him, they can't play those positions either. So, yeah. To be honest, I looked at the side. I didn't think it was going to play like that, but. No, I just, as I say, Naki Wells needs to play with a partner. I would have started today with Conway and Britton up front because we know exactly what Naki can do.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have risked him getting injured.
No.
So I'd have started with those two up front and probably gone 3-5-2. I don't know. I was just totally unimpressed. I thought the young lads did all right. I like Britton. I've been campaigning for him to start for about 2 months because we haven't got a big man up front when Pham wasn't available. So much as I expected.
Okay. Mark, the starting lineup. I mean, let's look at, I mean, we've done the starting 11. On the bench, I mean, it was a mix of youth and experience, really, because, I mean, you got Tommy Rowe and, mustn't keep calling him Angela, Henry Lansbury on there. Henry. But, you know, no Callas. What were your thoughts on Callas being left out, Mark?
I think you can read too much into that. I mean, he knows what he's going to get from Callas, and he wanted to see Baker, and Baker put in some tough tackles. I can see why Ian's been lauding Louis Britton, but I didn't realise how emphatically he'd go about his job. With Sorensen, it was quite great that he left him on his backside, and Canos certainly felt his boot
he
as
did.
Well.
He put himself about.
I think we were Brentford's back three were just so comfortable with that formation. We would have been better with a five-man midfield, I think, and given something to think about in the middle of the pitch. Norgaard was bringing the ball out into space and just playing easy balls down the centre all the time, but by dissecting our holding two. And Backinson had some excellent chances to take us forward in the first half, but he just kept losing the ball.
He did.
He's got to sort that out.
Yeah, I mean, talking about individual players, I'll be honest, I thought Casey Palmer, there was one situation. I didn't think, you know, if you look at the players who are out there today, I wasn't overly impressed with him. I got to bring up this one here that Les has commented. Ian, I'm sure you'll want to meet him in the car park when we have the pre-season get-together. But Les has said, Ian's back, similar feeling to Derby staying up. I mean, that's very unkind, Les, but there we go. All right, let's get into the action. City were attacking as they do the familiar Atio end in the first half, and I'm debating. In fact, I have decided I'm going to be in block W13. So, having been in W15 for the last four years, however long the Lansdowne's been open, I've just moved back to the other side, and it was the young Scott having a free kick just outside the box early on. Dave, I mean, he just looks, you can't say he's a player for the future, just his demeanour and his confidence. He's a player for the now, isn't he? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I find it quite amazing, really, that I watched him probably two or three times for our under-23s and once or that half a game he played for England under-18s. And for a lad at 17, I kind of thought, yeah, he's kind of one of those players who just kind of glides around the pitch, got two good feet. He's really good technically, but you think, how's he going to cut it at, you know, championship level? And I guess a lot of people say, oh, he needs a loan. I think a loan to a lower league club is probably the wrong thing for him, because I think he's technically good enough to play at this level. Whether he, you know, not every week or anything like that, but he's gone in there and he just looks so at home. You know, how many cynical fouls did Brentford make on him today when he kind of got away from them? I thought he was really, really impressive, and I think he's one of those players you're going to need to be really, really careful with next season. You don't overplay him, but you also give him plenty of opportunity as well to at least be around the squad.
He looks the real deal, doesn't he?
I guess we'll talk a little bit later about the whole kind of like under-23s and loan situation, but I think there might be a different dynamic about how we manage our under-23s next season. If I was doing it, it would probably be very different. So, we'll talk about that later. But no, he looks a real talent, doesn't he? You know, oozes confidence, which is
definitely
brilliant.
Definitely. I mean, the first half, it was quite a quiet affair. But, Mark, we had a flurry of activity towards the end. Naki Wells had a shot blocked. The corner was taken. And then Naki, probably his only real shot of note in the game. It was saved from Rea, although had it gone past Rea, it would have been offside. That was a good little flourish from City at the end. And had they gone in 1-0 up, it wouldn't have been an unfair reflection on the game, would it?
No, I thought our shape was good. We were quite busy around the ball. And Wells, really, if he'd have put his laces through that, he probably would have scored. I think he tried to place it and a defender Janssen got a block on it and it went wide. It was a shame. I don't think Wells was offside for the ball from the corner. He got a great save out of Rea, but it will go down.
I didn't think he was offside either. And then straight after that was in time added on in the first half. Forrest had a shot. He was deemed offside, but his shot hit the post, and that definitely did look offside. I mean, Ian, that first half, if City had gone in 1-0 up with Naki Wells' shot, it wouldn't have been unfair because they were more than a match for high-flying, high-scoring Brentford, weren't they?
Well, we played a very low block for the 45 minutes. I mean, when you say a low block, our defence was mostly... we surrendered possession. I mean, they finished up with 74% possession in the game. We had a low block. There was four of us. Our back four was on the edge of our penalty area, just in front of it. And we just played to deny them space. And it was more like an away performance if we were, say, playing Man City in the Cup, where you you keep everybody behind the ball and go for a lucky break. If we'd have gone in 1-0 up, you could have said it'd been all right. But Brentford always looked to me like they had another two gears to go up. And if we'd have spent more time attacking them, they'd have broke on us and gone through us like a dose of salt. So, I wasn't overly impressed. And I think a lot of simple stuff went wrong. I thought our passing was poor. And as I say, you have Backinson and Masengo trying to play the two in a 4-2-3-1. And I don't think
it didn't really work. No.
No, it didn't. Not at all. I don't think it's the right position for either of them, to be honest. Yeah. I'm trying to be as positive as I can be, but, you know, we need to be so much better
objective
than that next season.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the second half started and Ivan Toney had been kept quiet pretty much in the first period. And then 51 minutes, he put a shot into the side netting. For me, the crucial point of the game came on 52 when Viner came on for the injured Mariappa, and the back four didn't look the same after that. And Dave, the opening goal, it came on 56 minutes. Viner and Masengo both failed to clear, and the ball was worked to Ivan Toney. Goal number 31 for him. A good player, one that maybe in a different circumstances could have ended up at Ashton Gate if we'd have been a little bit more bold in the transfer market years ago.
I thought it was a bit of a lucky goal, really, wasn't it? We didn't clear our lines, but they got Viner deflects it straight into his path. Otherwise, it's, you know, bobbling through, and Bentley just puts his cap on it. And so, you know, they got the break. I thought Toney was a little bit lucky that, you know, he could have been off the pitch by that point, because he got booked first half and then he did a blatant shove in the back of Baker for a square ball early in the second half. I thought he cut a really frustrated figure until he got his goal. And you know, Baker clattered him in the first half as well, didn't he, on one occasion, winning the ball as well. And I thought we really, I think overall, I thought we would, you know, we didn't come out to start the second half. I think halftime came at the wrong time for us. But I thought we'd start to grow into that first half.
Yeah.
We'd start to pinch balls higher up the pitch. And we probably had our best spell in that latter quarter of an hour of the first half. But yeah, the goal was a bit of a killer, really, but a bit lucky as well.
Yeah, no, that's definitely right. I mean, Mark, the Bentley kept City in it because there was a double substitution by us where Janna and Edwards came on for Wells and for me the disappointing Palmer. But Mark, the save of the game came on 65 minutes. It was five-star stuff. Norgaard sort of hit it. Was it on the half volley? He touched it round. That was a stunning save. And he did another one just after that. Yeah, he did about four saves in the space of about 5 minutes, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, his positional play is absolutely fantastic. Stand strong on the near post. I think he's decent on one-on-ones, and his reflexes are terrific. I mean, he was head and shoulders. He was player of the season, but you know, he's our biggest asset. And I think a lot of people think that he might be transferred this season because he might go on to better things. I'm sure there'll be lots of interested clubs out there if they've got money, you know, for some of the relegated teams possibly. But superb keeper, and it's a shame that our best player's got to be a second
string. He could be a second string to a Premiership keeper, if not their first choice or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
but it is age.
His money.
27. You think you want to be playing regular football because I think he can get better. Goalkeepers tend to mature of age, don't they? Like fine wine, and
you could
see him getting better. He just needs to dominate his area a bit better from crosses.
That's right.
He'll also want to be earning 40 grand a week, which he isn't doing at Ashton Gate.
Yeah,
that's the big exactly. thing. And I think we may need to sell him at least to get some of the money to strengthen the squad.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I was going to ask you, Ian, your thoughts on Bentley, because he showed the sort of form that prompted City to bring him in and why he was a good star for Brentford, save that one season where he lost his confidence a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like all goalkeepers. You don't normally see the best of them until they're in their late 20s, early 30s. I agree that he could do with being a bit better on crosses, but I think if you had Peter Shilton playing behind our defenders this season, he'd be a nervous wreck.
Do you agree with Les's comment, Ian, that like Frankie Fielding, Bentley is a little bit too short for a goalkeeper? Or do you think he's got enough stature about him?
No, I don't think he's too short, but I think the main thing with Daniel Bentley is he needs a lot of help defending. In terms, if you've got three Nathan Bakers in the team, if you could keep them fit, that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? You wouldn't concede like we do from set pieces. And one thing we did today, we didn't concede very many corners or long throw opportunities in like we normally do. If you imagine, if you take the difference between today and the game against Cardiff, where the ball seemed to be in the box 90% of the time. But I think Bentley's an excellent player. I think you don't normally have goalkeepers as captains, but I think he'd be a better captain than Kalas.
Absolutely. I mean, Lisa's pointed out here, she said that twice in the last decade, a goalkeeper has won Bristol City Player of the Season. And in two of those, we conceded 152 goals and finished 24 and 19th. I mean, does that say, I suppose you could say, is that a good thing that your goalkeeper's been Player of the Season because he saved you from a good few good hide-ins, which I guess Bentley has. Anyway.
It's a little bit like Kalas and Viner being top of the block lists, and that was lauded from the rooftops when really it's a sign of a poor team, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, everybody was getting it. Oh, yeah, they're top of the blocks, Kalas and Viner, aren't they great? Well, yeah, but the rest of the team can't be, otherwise they wouldn't need to be, would they? I'd rather we were top of the goal-scoring chart.
Absolutely. Well, we're bottom of the shots on target this year, but that's one thing we have broken a record in. Dave, the Brentford wrapped the game up, really, with the two goals in 6 minutes, and it just showed what they can be when they're an attacking side. I mean, that goal on 77, I think it was about six pieces of one-touch football around the box, and then Mbeumo, another one of their free scoring strikers. That was a classy goal, wasn't it? Whichever way you look at it.
Yeah, there's not a lot you can do about that when, you know, good first touch play, movement off the ball. yeah, just got to kind of, you know, give them a bit of a praise for that. You know, I think on my notes, I just wrote, what a goal. Left yeah. it at that, really. Yeah.
And then the other one, the third, Canos, again, that was ball pinging from left to right. I mean, yeah. you know, you couldn't blame Bentley for either of those because they just outplayed us, didn't they, really?
Yeah. I think I'm not sure whether it was Viner just got a little toe that probably took it more towards Canos and away from Sessegnon, which was a bit unfortunate. So, yeah, they put us to the sword in the, you know, from probably second half onwards, didn't they, really? They stepped it up. And, they're a really good side, and you have to give them credit for that. You know, they work their patterns of play. They're patient where they need to be. And,
yeah.
and I think they tired us out. And I think, you know, when you hear Pearson's comments after the game around, you know, we're not fit enough. And yeah. normally it's the kind of thing that the manager says when they first come into a club because it's an easy win. Oh, yeah, well, they're not fit enough. And he hasn't resorted to that. He's kind of kept his powder dry. But I've been saying it all season. We'll have like a 15-minute spell at the start of the game and we're blowing out our backs, aren't we, then? We let teams get back into games and we can't sustain it. And I think he's identified that as our
overall fitness. That's all back to conditioning, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a big problem. And I think, you know, once again, just going on to his post-match interview where, you know, I think he made just comments, you know, players will be off on their holidays now. And he went, no, they won't, or words to that effect. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're being kept in for a week before they go off on their holidays and given kind of strict, here's what your conditioning work is going to be over close season. Make sure those of you that are coming back come back fit because it ain't going to be no easy pre-season either.
No, well, he said they're going to, the little bit I've said, seen, I haven't listened to the interview myself, but he said they're going to have a pre-season like no other they've had before. So that'll be interesting. Mark, the two Brentford goals that they scored is summed up what they're all about, which is fast-flowing, positive football. And Waymo and Canos, a player I think that we were linked with, ex-Liverpool, went to Norwich, then Norwich on to Brentford, unless I'm mistaken.
Correct.
You know, do you think it's going to be their year this year, Mark?
Well, it's interesting because they've got Bournemouth, who managed to slip up at home. They've done the double over them, but on their day, Bournemouth, they've got some strong physical players. You think they get to the final again and beat maybe the likes of Swansea or
Barnsley.
Or Barnsley. They just didn't really turn up last year against Fulham. You think, you know, I was really surprised. They just, you know, with Ollie Watkins and Saeed Benrahma, they just didn't get into the game at all. And then Joe Bryan outdid them with that long-range free kick with David Raya. Just didn't, you know, he was so far across the goal that the ball was in the opposite corner before he moved. You know, they really let themselves down. But you think that they could go up. But that second goal, it's a four-man move. I mean, Abuane to Mercandes, Canos, and then back again. It was just great, close one-touch football. And just shows what you can do.
Yeah.
But
Ian, Mark, Ian, do you think it's Brentford's year this year? You know, they've been knocking on the door for a while now. Do you think they've got enough, or do you think, you know, they've had a little bit of a wobble? Well, saying that, I don't think they've. How many have they lost in their last 10? Yeah,
I think they've won their last four.
So and they drew a lot of games. Had a lot of games drawing, I think.
Well, if that's having a wobble, I wouldn't mind us having a wobble like that. But I think it's too close to call because it can depend on a referee indecision, a mistake. You know, I mean, when you look at the final last season, you wouldn't have put big money on Joe Bryan getting two goals, would you?
Well, but he does always do it on the big games, you know. So,
think, I mean, coming back to some of what was being said previously, if you look at our defending, we can't defend individually or as a collective, so we don't close people down properly. When you close someone down, you run up, you tackle them, you don't run up, get a meter away and then say, go on, do what you like. And that's what we do. We don't mark people and we certainly don't put in enough tough tackles. We got five bookings, but I think we're apart from one or two, like Baker in Britain, I would say, the rest of them are pretty physically weak. And that's been clear all season. But going back to the playoffs, no clue, because the teams are so close. If you had to bet your house on it, I'd probably say possibly Brentford, but Barnsley are in fantastic form. So, yeah.
They drew against Norwich, didn't they, today?
You can't write them off.
No. Let's look at the one positive of the game, if you can say such a thing when you've lost 3-1 at home and your 25th defeat of the season. Is it 25? I think it is.
Yeah, it's 25.
Louis Britton had come on with 20 minutes to go, which is a decent run. Came on for Conway, who seemed a bit subdued today compared to his performance against Millwall last week. But it wasn't a bad goal, was it? I mean, the free kick was taken by Scott, I believe, over to Baker on the far side. And there was Louis Britton, who'd been physical in a way that we've not seen a City centre forward probably since Milan Juric or something like that. But that's what Louis Britton's all about, isn't he? But he's your traditional sort of big, bulky centre forward, isn't he?
He is, yeah, yeah. And I might have mentioned this before, that I played with his dad and played against his dad, and you're much better off with his dad in the same team as you than against you, because he was hustle, bustle, elbows all over the place. He was a nightmare to mark, and Louis looks like he's a chip off the old block. He really does. He plays exactly the same way as his dad, and I think his big challenge over the summer will be making sure he gets to that kind of professional level of fitness. Because he's a big lad to carry around. He's probably still growing into his body a bit as well. So it'd be interesting to see how he works that out over pre-season. But he's, you know, I think some people on OTIB have sort of said things in the past like, oh, he only scores goals in under 23 football because he's big. And I think that's a massive understatement of his ability. He scores all types of goals as well. It's not just all, you know, barging people out of the way and physical. He's got good feet. He really has, you know, and he scores good goals. So, yeah, I was really, really pleased for him. And
I mean, he's not slow either, Dave.
He's not. You know, he's a handful.
I would have started him in Conway today. I just didn't see the point in starting Naki.
I don't think he wanted to go two up top. I think that was the problem.
You could have started Britton because he's more capable of playing that position than anybody. Yeah. Because one thing I noticed today is we kept going long and we kept giving the ball away.
It did a bit.
It doesn't help that our midfield players were giving the ball away a lot as well. So that's a team problem. But, you know, if you want to go long, you need the people up there who can win the first and second balls, the flick-ons, and hold the ball up get players into play. I just find it annoying.
Guys, when you look at
do you know what was noticeable in the second half was that when Massengo or Backinson tried to bring the ball away from a Brentford attack, Brentford's forwards were tracking back and nicking the ball off them and starting it all over again. That's how slow we were. They were squeezing us from both sides.
It's funny, isn't it? And condense the play, how easy it is to win the ball back.
Yeah.
Guys, look, I mean, the thing is, you know, we've got loads of players. And if you look at next season, like we've got Chris Martin, who's not going anywhere, he's under contract, and you've got Louis Britton. And in both of those, you've got sort of, I call them big men up front. Now, is Louis Britton, rather than him going out on loan somewhere, is Louis Britton, you know, where you could sort of say, well, look, Chris Martin's our first choice in the mould of a Kiefer Moore, and Louis Britton's there, right, who can be a backup. And instead of going out and finding a replacement for Pham, whatever money we have got to spend, you can say, well, look, that's the target position sorted. I mean, Dave, do you see what I'm saying from that point of view? You know, if you have a big man, what's the point of going out? When you've got Louis Britton and Chris Martin, right, which is a 30-year-old and a 18, 22, whatever he is, you don't really need to go out and spend £2.5 million on a Kiefer Moore. Cardiff got lucky with him, but that to me looks like
how can you say they got lucky with him? He's a Welsh international striker. He's scoring goals in internationals, and he scored goals for Cardiff for fun.
Right. He was lucky. Yeah, I'm being a bit harsh on him, but let me put the question to Dave. But we're spending money when we've almost got a solution there with a player, Ian, that you're saying should be given a go, and we've got a good experience pro. But Dave, your views, challenge my view that's the target man sorted without having to spend.
I think I'd probably just turn it around slightly the other way and say, is forward our biggest priority this summer? And I think if you look at you know, let's just assume Weimann's going to get an extension. It certainly sounds the way Pearson's talking. You've got Weimann, you've got Martin, you've got Wells, you've got Britton, you've got Conway, you've got Martin. Bell. Did I say Bell? Who did I miss? Yeah.
Pearson and Bell. Pearson and Bell and Martin.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
Pearson's not a striker, Dave. He's a winger.
Right.
Who's this?
Pearson is a winger. Really.
Yeah,
he's not a striker.
No, I didn't mention. I was talking
to Dave P.
Yeah. So I think we've got six. Semenyo as your forward rather than striker, so to speak. So I think we've got plenty of numbers there.
What, number 10?
No.
For Semenyo?
No. Forward, as in, you know, can play somewhere along the forward line.
I think he's a wide player, either wide left or wide right. Antoine.
Yeah. So let me carry on. So I think we've got seven people there. That it's not our focus to go out there and buy strike. Now, if Pearson suddenly says, "Well, I'm not extending Weimann, I'm going to try and shift Chris Martin, and I'm going to try and move on Naki Wells," then the dynamic shifts massively. And I think until we see that. Then I don't know, but if we just say for sake of argument those seven are around, then if you're going to play one up front, then some of those players aren't going to get many minutes, and that will also feed into the dynamic. I certainly see what you're saying. If we're going to play with a target man at times, you know, and you know someone like Martin, then Britton's the closest type of player to that, and probably gives you some different. Abilities to Martin. He's probably better in the air than Martin. Martin's very much a chin down striker, isn't he? You know, knock it into his feet, into his chest.
Martin's only 5'10" as well.
He is. He's not very big, actually. Is he?
No, people talk about him like he's 6'6". I mean, he's
got
5'10".
Big hair. but no. So I think what we have to be careful of is that we don't automatically think that in the likes of Bell, Conway and Britton, that their next step has to be a loan out to League One or League Two, because it might not be. They might actually be the kind of player like a Lloyd Kelly who doesn't need the loan. And so I think, you know, it'd be interesting how they do in pre-season and what comes about. But I'm kind of massively sat here just waiting for things to happen that start to clear where I think Pearson is trying to go. And at the moment, you know, we've just finished the last game. We don't know retain list. We don't know which out-of-contract players are going. So it's just too early to say. Certainly see the logic in keeping him around if we're not going to go out there and, you know, look for other strikers. So, yeah.
I think the thing is as well, you know, you've aggregated all those players that are possible forwards. And again, have we got quantity and not quality? Because we're saying, well, blah, 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 we got a high number. Yeah. And yeah, okay, put the youngsters out. But, you know, I think, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough. Is that what they say? If you're old enough, you're good enough? Whichever way around it is. But Britton...
No, if you're good enough, you're old enough, yeah.
You know, Britton's worthy of a place on the bench, potentially. Yeah,
You look at something like Marcus Rashford. Ashley Fletcher was in front of him at Manchester United. They loaned out Ashley Fletcher to Barnsley. Did all right. And then after a series of moves, went to West Ham, never made it. He's nowhere now, just been released by Middlesbrough. So it can happen. Some players can survive at that, you know, that high level when they're put into the first team. But what it's going to do, out of necessity, because Nigel trusts those players to give him everything, they're going to be given a huge lift now after being given their debuts for City. Tommy Conway got his first goal.
If you listen to what Pearson said after the game, the kid, he basically said, and in the written press conference, that they're only in there because of injuries, and he wouldn't have given all those players their debuts if it wasn't for that.
So, but he's still going to give them a huge lift, and
he's done it out of necessity.
Great.
But of those young strikers, I would probably only keep Britton here, and I'd let the rest go out on loan. Like you say, depending who else he signs.
I go back on this one, guys, and look at Freddie Hines in 17-18. Came in, burst on the scene, looked like the most likely player we had to cover for Bobby Reid in terms of kind of energy and, you know, buzzing around and things like that. We got to January and we loaned him out. And I think
he scored two goals in the League Cup, didn't he? Two crackers as well.
I think that lad would have been much better staying around the first team squad and learning from the strikers that were there, learning from Bobby Reid, and said, we sent him out. Then we sent him out on loan and he's just disappeared nowhere, and we've now released him. And I think that was poor management of him. Now, he might have had a dreadful attitude, and that's why they tried to, you know, send him to Wrexham so he'd go and learn about, you know, being part of a first team somewhere. But it didn't
and
work.
Welsh.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. But,
well,
but
if you go to Wrexham, that, if you've probably been to Wrexham, Dave, that's enough to make anybody sort of lose it, really, isn't it?
So we're getting back to miserable.
So I don't think there's a, you know, a foolproof method of what you do with your youngsters. And Les, yeah. I totally get what you're saying. You know, what's Sam Bell done? Absolutely nothing at this point. But who knows, in 3 months from having a pre-season with the first team, he might be the most eligible of those strikers to stay around the squad. I think there's just too many unknowns at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, most people would have said, oh, you know, what's Tommy Conway going to do when he comes in at 18? And he's looked really, really good. I think sometimes players look better with better players.
Yeah.
And sometimes
players can't raise it.
And I think we just have to, I think we're so quick to try and judge how good a player's going to be when we've never even seen them play in a, you know, a full first team match. You know, we've trying to judge them from under 23 football, and it doesn't follow a nice linear path. Every player's different, and I think we just have to just be a bit mindful of that and not jump to making judgments on players' futures at such an early age.
The good thing is our under 23 squad is very rich. Is going for a very rich vein at the moment, I suppose.
It's top of his league, isn't it? Top of his league,
aren't we?
Is it
they've got a semi-final and a final to, well, they win the semi-final. They've got a final to play as well against, I think, the Northern
Birmingham
version of the under 23 league. But look, you have to rely on people like Brian Tinian, who's one of the few people down there that I would absolutely trust about, you know, what's best for a player, to say, well, yeah, I think he should stay, even if you kept Britain as your... If you signed a big bloke in Britain, was your backup? Because don't forget, Chris Martin can play next to a big guy and often did. And he can also play 10. So drop off a little bit. But he's very good at it. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing Chris Martin and Andy Vyman back in a starting lineup because I think they've both got brains. And they can play into feet. And Vyman's running is very good. You just need somebody that can pass the ball to him.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, yeah, carry on.
But if you look at it, we've got 7 strikers down there. And 4 of them are young lads. So you're not going to be able to play them all. If we play 4-5-1, you're only going to have 1 up front and possibly 1 or 2 on the bench if it all goes pear shaped. And we could play 4-5-1 because we have got O'Dowd who can play wide left and Semenyo who could play wide right. But you need, you know, 2 attacking midfielders and a good defensive one in there to make that system actually work.
Yeah.
So I think we need to see, you'll know soon enough by the players that he's bringing in. But I mean, if I find it, Henry Lansbury in, Danny Simpson are the first 2 players he's signed or he's keeping hold of.
You'll be underwhelmed.
I'm going to be severely underwhelmed. And I don't dislike either of them, but I just think we should be looking to do a lot better.
Who was that, Ian? Lansbury?
Lansbury and Simpson, both of them.
Lansbury and Simpson. I don't think they're terrible players, but I do think we should be looking at it better than those players. If you look at what's available would be Premier loans that you don't. Pearson's got his finger in the pie on.
It's a dynamic, though, Ian, isn't it? I agree with you on Lansbury. I think there's better options around than him. But I think Danny, if you think Hunt and Simpson and Sessegnon are all going back to, you know, either out of contract or Sessegnon going back to Fulham, then you need 2 right backs next season, don't you? Now, in an ideal
world... Unless you play Zach Viner there.
Which he seems to have not wanted to do at all. So I'm guessing that's not a genuine option. Okay, so if we just rule that out for now. I agree. I quite fancy just seeing him at right-back, if I'm being honest. But we've got to bring 2 right-backs in. And let's just say, well there's 2 out-of-contract players, you know, whether they are still available or not. There's Niambi at Blackburn, and there's...
Who's 6'2", as somebody pointed out. Yeah,
yeah. Let's say Olusunde at Rotherham. How do you convince 2 right backs to come in, you can't lie to them and say you're both first choice, because I think there's an argument that says, and you know, I'm not saying it's necessarily what I do, but I think Pearson will say, actually, I'll keep Danny Simpson around because he's going to be my eyes and ears around the playing squad, and I'll make sure I get and he'll be a cover, a squad player, but I'll go out and get the best right back I can. Because if I go out and get the best right back, I can't go and get another right back, because they're going to say, well, when am I going to play? And yeah. I think that's a dynamic we need to understand. Yeah. And it will all become a bit clearer as the summer goes on.
Well, it depends how quickly he moves with it all, doesn't it, really? And I mean, one player who looks like he is going for the exit door at Ashton Gate is certainly Jack Hunt, because he wasn't injured, Dave, was he, today? So he's going. Mark, you've been waiting patiently in the background. Before we start getting into individual players and what have you, looking forward to next season, I mean, the final 10 games, you know, 0 wins, 3 draws, 7 defeats, 3 points out of the last 30, 39 points out of the last 126. It's a joke, but Mark, you've done some statistics. This is our worst season ever, and it's a miracle that we didn't get relegated, isn't it, with the record that we've had. Tell us more. You were spouting off about it
earlier. I think our worst defeats up until this point, let me double check this. I think in 1979-80 we lost 20 games. We got relegated from Division 1. And then in 1921-22 we lost 21 games, and we finished bottom behind Bradford Park Avenue. I wonder whatever happened to them. In 82-83, 81-82, we lost 22 games. So that's the most that we lost that I can see in a short term up to then.
So we lost 25 games. Lost, we stayed up. That's the most we've ever lost any season. That is incredible. Absolutely incredible. Okay, guys, quick, before we go on about our players, I was keeping tabs on Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, and obviously Rotherham. And Marlon Pack, Dave, he got the equaliser, which basically put Rotherham down. There was some talk this week about Pack was one of those players that maybe we shouldn't have got rid of, but I thought, he'd done his time here, to be fair. I didn't weep when he went out the door. What were your thoughts on the skirmish at the bottom of the table, and Marlon Pack being somebody who left us?
I'm gutted for Rotherham that they didn't hold on and sent both Derby and Sheffield Wednesday down. Nothing would have given me greater play. I would have been quite happy seeing Wickham win 13-0 and them stay up as well. But those two teams have cheated financial fair play, and one of them's got their just desserts now. And you know, tough the other one. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sanctions on them over the summer, which probably should have happened this year as well. But hey ho. In terms of Marlon Pack, why'd we bother doing that today? But for me, Pack was, we'd seen the best of Marlon Pack, I think, but I think some of that is down to Lee Johnson and his tactics and forcing into playing this very defensively minded quarterback role, which I think stifled Marlon Pack. It also stifled us as an attacking team as well, but it did give Webster and Callis a lot of protection as well. So we got good money for him, but I think the biggest crime was that it showed our lack of succession planning, because there's no way you can build a whole team around Pack, which is what Johnson did, and then move him on and bring Naji and Masengo in as his replacement. So
said this week, wasn't it? It was very last minute.
That's the failing for me, you know, to hear all this crap that, you know, oh, we're two or three transfer windows ahead. Mark Ashton is a big bluffer, and it's which you're about to find out.
Well,
that's the nicest thing anybody's probably called Mark Ashton the last few days, Dave.
I mean, he'll probably be claiming credit for Ed Sheeran being their new shirt sponsor as well, actually. I mean, Dave and, all of you, but I'll pick up on, Dave, you did me an email, and Mark, you've done a lot of research on Barnsley, yeah?
Yeah.
And the thing, you're talking about Mr. Ashton, and you said, Dave, I'm going to read this so everybody who's listening can hear. As for City, we've frittered away vast sums brought in by bringing in too many average players whilst letting far too many walk for free, culminating this summer. Our recontracting strategy is appalling. It should be a rarity to let a player under 30, run his contract down. Get them to 12 months at worst. Decide whether you want to keep them. If so, extend them. If not, sell. Even if sell cheap. And you go on to say, using Dijon as an example, and this is all down to Mr. Ashton, never mind him saying we've offered Dijon
and Lansdowne as well.
Absolutely. But you say if you take Dijon as an example, when Ashton did say we get the value on the pitch, or maybe he was told to say that by the chairman or the owner, rather. If we take Dijon, even in January, are you telling me we couldn't have sold him for $1 million? By not selling him, it's cost us 400k and a half for season's wages and 600k. In amortization. That's the write down of the transfer fee, correct, Dave?
Yeah.
So for keeping Dijon here from end of January till like 2 weeks ago, that's cost us $1 million. And when Dave's saying we could maybe have sold him for $1 million, right, that's a cost of $2 million. And as Dave said, we haven't got $2 million of value on the pitch, have we? Yeah. And that $2 million equates to 3 free transfers on 13K a week. Or 4 on 10K. And if you look at somebody like Alex Mower at Barnsley, who might be on 8K a week, you could double his wages to bring him here, right?
Seven hires.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what a joke the whole off-field stuff has been under, I'll say, well, it's been bubbling for 3 years, hasn't it? The whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, but we can't, I mean, we are where we are. You know, there's no point in crying over the spilt milk. And you're right, Dave. The finger has got to be pointed at the chairman, the owner, well, the chairman and the owner, the two individual people, because they've taken their eye off the ball. Okay. But anyway, we've done that. I mean, guys, Nigel was confirmed in the job and everything. Biggest disappointment for me this week was when I heard that he's keeping the coaching staff. Or do you think that was just a patsy to keep the, you know, to keep everybody happy before we get down to the serious business as this month progresses? Ian, your thoughts on that? We spoke separately. Disappointed that Simpson and Downing appear as though they're going to be kept on.
Well, he didn't exactly say that. What he said is, just because I'm bringing in people, don't automatically assume it's coaches. He didn't actually say I'm keeping Simpson and Downing on.
He did.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, he said he's keeping his... Now, what he didn't say, Ian, is I'm keeping them on in exactly the same roles as what they've got now.
You know, I think I can't... I mean, I've listened to his interviews and I can't remember him naming them at all. But that perhaps I missed it. But I you know, there's two ways you look at it. He can look at it and say, well, they can only work with what they've got.
I'm just looking at a text, Ian, on here. Is this Matt Vives who's made the comment? Is that the Matt Vives of Three Peeps?
He said, a free season ticket as well. Yeah.
Ran a free season ticket.
Well, Matt's on Sound of the City on Monday night as well.
He's never been on there before, has he?
He said here Shakespeare has been at the HPC this week for talks. I thought Shakespeare's been on the HP source this week, but I mean he's not Craig Shakespeare's not going to leave Villa, Mark, is he, or anybody? Is he going to leave Villa?
Shakespeare,
what's he
David,
doing
that,
at Villa?
That is the question.
Yeah, but he's not. What's he doing at Villa? I mean, he's John Terry's coach up there, isn't he, to Dean Smith?
I think one's assistant manager, one's coach, aren't they? I'm not quite sure how they structure it. Did anyone see David Rennie there today in the ground?
Well, I had to laugh.
David Rennie, the other one.
Because I always thought it, because somebody put, there was a picture of a bloke in a suit, or somebody says somebody with a suit, and then they showed a picture of Dave Rennie, and then even on Wikipedia it says not to be confused with the player of the same name, and somebody in an O-tip put, last time I saw Dave Rennie had a balding head and a big moustache, so he's obviously not twigged that they're two separate people.
Who's the Dave Rennie that's down there then?
Sorry?
The old Leicester physio.
It's the Leicester physio,
well, that would make sense, because what I heard was that there is a director of football coming in, and obviously a lead physio or medical director, whatever they want to call them these days, that will replace roles. So that would seem fairly obvious. But the one that I mean, I think where they could save a lot of money, if you bring in a director of football, you don't have a new CEO, because you just take at what Ashton did and split it amongst three people, or even four. Yeah. Shut up a minute. You've got John Lansdowne, Lisa Knights, and Mark Kelly, and you've got the new director of football.
Mm.
So why not split the role? Because you save 600 grand doing that.
Yeah, I think there's better ways to cut that 600 grand, isn't there, Ian?
Well, I don't know. I just don't think you give it to them.
I mean, Luke Wehrhahn was what in old money was the football secretary. Yeah, player registrations and all of that. And that is a basic admin job. And you could probably find, that's a job that you could head on in a League One.
Why not give it to somebody that's already there and save
them? I might. Of course. Yeah, but,
I bet he was on 100 grand as well for it.
No, I mean, that job, you probably get somebody doing that for 60, 70 grand. Yeah, but you bring somebody in who knows it, because that's the thing with Ashton. Yeah, I mean, for Steve Lansdowne not to have been saying to Mark Ashton maybe 6 months ago, bit of a rumour going, Mark, that you might be off to Ipswich. Any truth in this? Because if he said, then when it was announced on April the 13th that Mark Ashton was going, right, officially, then if he'd said to Lansdowne in December, actually, Steve, I am going to leave, then Steve would have started his search then. So if Steve knew about it and believed it was when it was announced at the beginning, well, when Ashton was linked in the media with Ipswich. More naivety, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Are you agreeing with that, Dave, yeah? You agree?
I think when those rumours came out in late January, early February, whenever it was, for Lansdowne to have not taken action at that point is pretty crap, in my opinion.
It's criminal.
He must have known ages ago. I mean, he must have been heard it on the grapevine about Mark Ashton.
Football's a very closed business, because the minute
with the Game Changer Limited creation, he must have known about that.
Michael O'Leary, who when he became a registered director at Game Changer in July last year, right? Somebody would have said, a word in somebody's ear, because it would got back. Well, that Michael O'Leary's lined up with Ipswich. Him and Ashton have been, da 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 da. It's very closed, sort of like circle football, and somebody might have said to Steve, is your chief executive of the year, do you think he might be joining Ipswich? And then he says to Ashton, are you going to be joining Ipswich? Either he lies in his face and says no, I'm not, or Lansdowne doesn't even answer the question, and then it's a massive big surprise, because to get a chief exec, and interestingly I was looking at Adrian Bebbington's background, it was a name that was mentioned, he is just a media person, he was a media person for the FA, he wasn't some businessman or anything like that, but Ashton has taken the Lansdowne's pants down in every aspect of how the club's been managed over the last 3 years, in my opinion, and now the hard work starts. And as you say, Dave, you said about the players, if the players haven't finished the season yet, i.e. they're not going off on holiday, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that the new physio could come in and the deal's already been done and he can get an idea of the condition of the players before they go on holiday, rather than the new, not physio, rather than the Andy Rowles replacement. First he sees of the players is when they come back on the 1st of July. Do you think that's feasible? And that might explain why Dave Rennie was there.
I think that's exactly what's happening. There was also a photo today of Andrew Proctor, one of the physios, with Joe Williams, Liam Walsh, and Taylor Moore. Yes. Really putting them through their cases today as well. So I think we're at the point where, sorry, I'm just trying to make sure my chili doesn't burn. I think we're at the point where Pearson's just saying, right, we're going to have a week debrief. Everyone's going to know exactly what the plan is for when you come back. Here's your plans. You're going to have to check in every day or whatever with how you're doing on your keeping in your conditioning up. And I think that's what Rennie's been brought in to do, to make sure they go off on closed season with everything planned.
Yeah. So we shouldn't be worried, really. I mean, look, we've just done over the hour. Dave's got his chili there and what have you. I started to say, and then we went off on a sidetrack, and that was totally my fault. Barnsley, Mark, you were in contact with, you've got friends at Barnsley. What is it about them that is successful, because they're a smaller club even than Brentford, really, right? But they're there in the playoffs, yeah? They finished bottom but one last year. What is – they changed their manager after about 10 games this season. What is their trick? What were you told by your friends at Barnsley?
Well, what they did when the consortium containing Billy Beane took over in 2018
– Billy Beane of Moneyball fame, yeah.
Yeah, and the Oakland A's – they decided not to get many loan players in. I think they gradually phased that out, and they decided to bring players in on longer-term contracts, 3 to 4 years. And then they, if any of the players come in and are crap, they tend to pay them off. They pay very low wages. I think I was told Mowat was on $7,000 a week. Some players are on about 500 to a grand. So, I mean, players like Kiefer Moore, who played at Barnsley, he played alongside McBurney, who was on loan from Swansea at the time when we played him a few seasons ago in 2017-18. They've had a lot of good players going through him. Alfie Mawson, Conor Hourihane were all there. Mason Holgate, John Stones, all gone. But what they've done is really buy players. They've only had one player on loan this season, and that was the guy they got from Orlando City, Daryl DK, on loan in January. And they got an agreement to sign him for a low fee, although I think Orlando City are disputing that. But they just buy players for roles, which is what we don't do. We just seem to throw money and buy quantity.
Buy players for the sake of it with no real pattern. So
but
that's
the idea, the trick was to grow a team that gradually comes to fruition. Of course, with a team like Barnsley, they accept that they do have good seasons. They are going to lose some players. I mean, 3 or 4 seasons ago, they were in the top 6 come January. And all of a sudden, James Bree and Conor Hourihane went to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Sam Winnall went to Sheffield Wednesday, and they dropped like a stone. Well, yeah. You know, just one of those things. But they reinvest the money in the team, and they buy players for different roles. But they really got a gold nugget in Valerie and Ishmael, who came in to replace Gerhard Struder. I mean, Ishmael had managed Lask, and who played in the Europa League. So he managed it at a high level in Austria, really got the team playing together. They won 13 out of the last 19 games and drew three and lost three. That is ridiculous, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous form. So they're going in on a high. They were the second lowest wage bill, according to my friend Alan, in the championship, just above Rotherham.
Ridiculous.
That is absolutely ridiculous. And look where they are, and they're reaping the benefits because, you know, a nice tight-knit unit, a good manager, a 35-year-old CEO, director of football in Dane Murphy, and they're laughing. That
probably doesn't cost them $500,000 a year. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's interesting you say. And this thing about, we've had to sell our best players. Barnsley have done it, and they've come again, and Brentford have come again. So, you know, we're
using
bleating.
Using Moneyball style.
We're bleating. Everyone sells. We're bleating, exactly, Dave. We're bleating about, we had to sell all our best players. Well, get over yourselves, right? Every club, as you say, in the Championship has to do that. And I'm sure if Barnsley don't go up through the playoffs, then the likes of Alex Mowat and their other out-of-contract players could be on their way. I mean,
he's the only one who's out of contract.
He's the only one who's out of contract.
He's the only one.
Well, why? Why is that then? Why have they allowed him to go out of contract? And why are we...
Well, I suppose he's just... I think the trick is that he is the only one who's out of contract. Probably they've offered him another one, but the fact that he's the only player out of contract just shows how they're managing contracts.
Yeah.
Oh, and a very quick word to Matt Withers. Matt, I was only tongue-in-cheek about Sound of the City, about you being on there regularly. I've been on there plenty of times as well, Matt, so I'm sorry. Apologies. Yeah. I always love listening to you, seriously.
And Matt, if you're listening, you know you're always Sniveler. Welcome to come on. You're always welcome to come on as a guest on here, because we'll see if we can expand the capacity next season. Guys, let's just wrap up with a few things. Transfers and what have you. I mean, Ian, Nathan Baker. He looks, when he's fit, he looks good. Should he be a player that we do offer a contract to, if it was at reduced wages?
No.
Simple. Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, you can't. You've got a bloke there who's played 82 games in four seasons.
Yeah.
So and 20 of those he's been off before half time, either sent off or injured. Mm. So I think he's probably fitting on form. He's probably the best defender at the club. And I'd love to have him in the side if you could keep him fit, but no one's ever been able to keep him fit.
Yeah. Okay. Dave, Baker, stick or give him something or just let him go because he's dubious fitness record.
If we're playing pontoon or blackjack, can I burn? No. It's a no for me. I'd have really liked to have seen him be fit probably 2 months ago and we see 10 or 12 games out of him. And then I think we'd have had an indication as to whether, you know, it's stay or not. But it's a no for me. A bit of a heavy heart. I do like the guy, but no for me.
Mark, what do you feel about Baker?
Well, he's not the $6 million man. So, no, he's just the trouble. He's made of glass. He's our modern Dave Steve Brooker, a fantastic player on his day, but just too brittle, unfortunately. Yeah. And I'm sure somebody would take a chance on him, but his injury record is poor. Sorry, Nathan. Go home to your wife.
Yeah, my view, Tommy Rowe, he's probably not going to wear a City shirt again. Anybody disagree with that on Tommy?
No,
we all think he's going to go.
Great for 18 months with us, great free transfer for 18 months, but I think his legs may have gone with his final recent injury.
Do you think Naj will be... Naj is Naj in or out of contract this
year? He's in contract.
Do you think he'll be a Bristol City player on the beginning of August when we're on the first game of the season?
No.
Mark?
No.
Dave?
Euro shop window, I think, for Mr. Naj.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't disagree with you there. When you look at the emergence of Alex Scott, okay, one and a bit games. Liam Walsh, what do you think is going to happen here? Do you think he could end up at bloody Ipswich? Is he the player most likely?
No, I could see him ended up in Coventry. He'd be offered it. I don't know if somebody said he's been offered a new deal, but I think he won't get his. I don't think he'll get as good terms as he has at City. But I could see him going back to Coventry. They won't offer him as good money as we have.
Yeah,
he'll get regular football.
Yeah. What do you think, Dave, on Walsh?
I think he'll be offered a new contract if he hasn't already. Rumour is he has. I think he'll accept it. I know there's other people out there saying he's turned it down. I think he'll stay because I don't think he'll get anywhere near as good a deal anywhere else.
Yeah. What do you think, Ian? Walsh?
I think he's off.
You think he's off? Yeah. Okay. Does the panel think Casey Palmer, do we think he's got a future here? Could he be somebody where, you know, we just cut? I thought he was weak today. He didn't really do that much. But Casey Palmer, you know, would he be in your starting 11 next season?
We paid too much for him and we need to get shot and take a big hit. 1 million maybe. For somebody wishing to take a chance, he's had plenty of chances wherever he's gone, and he's never done it. I'm sorry, too inconsistent. Goodbye.
Yeah, what do you think, Dave, on that one, Casey?
I think we should be looking to see if we can get someone to take him on, whether that be on loan, because I think if we try and sell him, we'll take a hit on whatever his current value is, and we'll have to take a hit on wages as well. So I think we might try and do a similar thing to the Swansea loan, but I don't think there'll be many takers at 20 grand a week.
No. You agree with that, Ian? Casey Palmer?
Yeah, I don't think he's I was talking to someone tonight and I just said that there's certain players you look at and you think, I don't think you're a Nigel Pearson player. Yeah. And Naj is one of them and Palmer's another. So, I totally agree. And in terms of his defensive play, I think he's worked harder under Pearson, and on his day there is no doubt that you've got a player there, but he doesn't have enough days.
On his day, it doesn't.
In terms of tackling, he's an accident waiting to happen. What's he giving away now? Two or three penalties recently?
Yeah.
At least two.
Yeah, that's the one against Swansea and the one against Wickham. Dear.
Yeah. Do we think, now let's look at surprise departures maybe. Do we think, Dave, Masengo, I mean, he's been, as Ian's been saying ever since he's been here, no goals, no assists, runs around a lot, puts his, you know, does run around a lot. Didn't work that effectively today with Backinson in a two. Does anybody think Masengo, somebody might come sniffing in the summer, Premier League club, bring him in as a squad player? Dave?
No
chance. Not for anything like £4.5 million. That's for sure.
I think he's going to get better and better with us.
Well, that's good. That's good because he's got the energy there. Naki Wells, you know, he was out playing wide on the left again today. It's not his favourite position, is it? Do we think, could he be another Palmer where we say, do you want to go and what have you? What do we think? Ian, Naki here?
I think you either play him in a two up front, and like somebody said earlier on, it doesn't matter who you play up front. You could have Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez. With the service that they get from us, they struggle. And I think a lot of that can be said for Naki Wells. I think in an ideal world, I think it's something I said the other week, if you stuck him next to Kiefer Moore in the Cardiff team, he'd score 20, 25 goals in a season. But we just, for some reason, we just don't seem capable of playing like that. Perhaps when we're back to full strength, because he didn't look bad when he played next to Chris Martin at the start of the season, did he?
Yeah.
I think, but if you're going to play 4-2-3-1, then I think I can't see where Naki Wells fits in.
No. Finally, Antoine, you know, he's scored. He still looks raw. I mean, you know,
he scored his ass, David.
Do you think somebody might take a punt on him? Would we sell if they took a punt?
Would we sell 100%? Because we'd sell anybody for the right money. Mm. That's the club policy. Would somebody take a punt on him? Yeah, somebody like Palace. I could see them paying money because they've got a good record of developing.
How much money, though, Ian?
I think if anybody came in for Antoine at circa five, even more than that has been discussed. I mean, there were numbers flying around like 10, and people were looking at Jana as well, who I just haven't seen enough of now.
No.
But I think
did they pay for Easy from QPR?
15?
Yeah, I mean, 15, the thing is, he's a proven scorer. I mean, Antoine, he scored two of his backside in the league, one in the FA Cup. He's got potential, hasn't he? But that's about it.
Well, what you got to remember is he's quite tall, he's got pace, and he's got power. And
strength,
I think he's a wide. He's also got a good number of assists, and I think he's a wide player. I don't think for a minute. I don't see him as a striker yet. He might develop into one, but I think if you had, if you played a 4-5-1 and you had him on the right and O'Dowd on the left, you'd have some width and some straight.
We forgot about my friend O'Dowd, didn't we? I was just going to ask about him because I mean, he is who are the you're saying, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, the wingers that we've got here then are Sam Bell or Pearson that's a winger?
Conventional wingers,
Pearson, Semenyo and O'Dowd on the staff at the moment. Yeah.
O'Wara Edwards.
All right, a youngster, unproven. I don't think any of them hold a light to Nicholas Eliasson, in my opinion. And there we go. We let him go.
I wouldn't agree about Eliasson, David. He was a great impact sub, but what did he do other than that? And he could only play in a 4-4-2 as an out and out winger. There was no way he was going to track back, was there?
Matt said we got Adelakin as well.
God help us.
Let's just say that.
Do you know what? Adelakin, those couple of games that he played when he came back from loan, I wouldn't say he was brilliant. I'm not saying he's championship ability, but he's the one player who we've played out wide on that kind of 4-2-3-1 solution who's actually got a clue how to play it and didn't just stick out there on the line like Semenyo does, like Eliasson did. Actually comes in, drifts off the line. I don't think he's good enough, but he plays that position better for the team.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else has this season. I don't think I you'll be singing like we did for Martin Wolford. Do you remember that? There'll be one Martin Wolford. He used to be shite, now he's all right. That's because he scored two goals in two games about 12 years ago. Guys, this is 1 hour 20. What we're going to do in the close season, we've got a couple of in-conversation interviews to line up. If there's any real stuff happening off the pitch, then it's worthy of having a little chat. But what I'd like to do with all of you and anybody else who wants to email me, headhuntergb@gmail.com, we'll have little one-on-one chats, keep them short and sharp for about half an hour with your thoughts on City and a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on what needs to be done in the coming season, and just your general thoughts on City, your time supporting the club. So that'll keep things going. This is the 70th episode. I can't believe we've done that many, and we only started in
have you found out
June,
Rangers yet?
June last year. You know, I set this up because I was just so frustrated after we came back and with those four straight defeats after the initial lockdown. But here we are. The season's come to an end. We do look forward to next season, whatever you say. I'm looking forward to getting back in the ground in a new position for me in the Williams stand, saving a lot of money as I put on the, not the Williams stand, what am I talking about, Lansdowne stand, but enjoying supporting again. Guys, any final parting shots from you? Dave, first of all, you got any, what are you looking forward to most of over the next 3 months? Not coming on here.
First of all, I was going to say, thanks, Dave, for not necessarily asking me on in the first place, but I kind of gate crashed early on, and then it's been a regularish part of it. So thanks for that. I think for me, I am genuinely excited. I probably am at the end of every season, because I think, what are we going to do in the summer? And I think this summer in particular, we're going to see a lot of change. I don't think it's going to be as wholesale as everyone thinks. I think Pearson recognises you can't replace a whole squad in one window. So I think there might be a couple of surprises of players that he keeps on that maybe we didn't think that he should. And I think we just have to kind of trust him. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mark?
Thanks, David, for, you know, it's been great fun and a real roller coaster of the season. The first four games, the real highs, the absolute amazement of when it places at Huddersfield in the last 10 minutes and Cardiff. And I think we carried that into our conversation. Sometimes we couldn't believe how City pulled that out of the bag in places like QPR.
QPR knows, yeah.
It felt like a eulogy. But just to all the listeners out there, thanks for listening in. We've all lost so much, you know, Bristol City and personally, I think, over the last 18 months. And I think Bristol City owe it to all of us. And hopefully Nigel can bring back some integrity to Bristol City, because we don't have any at the moment, and that's what we want to do, get some respect back. And I think Steve really needs to apologise to the fans, because it's been absolutely bloody abysmal.
It has.
Thanks for listening, and let's hope we get better next season.
And finally, Ian, you've got to brush up on some of those impressions. We won't do any now, but your thoughts on the final thoughts on this season and what you're looking forward to doing over the next 3 months.
Well, I have to say, over the season, I've never seen a team so bereft of identity and character. But one thing that we've all spoken about is injuries. And just to give everybody an example, something I looked at this week, I looked at the team that beat Stoke away, which was one of our best 90-minute performances in most people's opinion.
Yeah.
Of the players that started that game, seven were not available to Nigel Pearson for our last two games against Millwall and Brentford, and another three that were on the bench that could come on and affect the game, like Jiju, haven't been available to Pearson. So that's 7 out of 11, which is massive.
Plus the ones that were injured at the time of that game anyway, which would have been Joe Williams as well, wouldn't
Williams
it?
Williams and Walsh and Baker.
Yeah.
Williams, Walsh and Baker. So the injuries have blighted our season, in fact decimated it, I would say. And I would say they're about 40% responsible for what's happened.
Yeah.
So and I don't think with the medical team that we had, I don't think Dean Old nor Nigel Pearson have really had what I'd call a fair crack of the whip.
No.
That being said, That being said, what I'm most looking forward to is the appointment of a director of football, chief medical officer, a vast improvement in our fitness, and a massive clear out. I understand what everybody's saying about you can't do it all at once, and Pearson said much the same yourself, said he wants six windows or 3 years, whichever way you do it. But I want to see a completely different Bristol City from an identity and character. And I want to be able to say to somebody after the first game when they say, well, what does City play like?
Yeah.
I want to be able to say, well, we're a really good attacking team. We pass the ball, or we're really solid and we've got some real thugs in there that hurt people, or something where I can identify whether we're a Burnley, we're a Man City. I don't care, providing we win.
Got some identity and play attacking and football, and we score some goals.
Yeah. And that way you'll keep the, because we're all City fans. We're not fans of Man United or somebody that's been really successful over the years where we're winning trophies by the bucket load. This is Bristol City we're talking about. We do need, I mean, can we please do, for example, what Barnsley have done this season? Is that
Wouldn't we love to do that? Get to the playoffs. Guys, thanks to all of you for making these enjoyable. All the listeners as well. Les, thanks for your comment. Dreadful season, but great pod. Thanks for that. And everybody who's contributed. And, you know, it'd be good when we all properly come out of lockdown to have something that invites everybody along for a pub night or something like that. That would be good, somewhere in Bristol, so we can
do a few drinks.
We could. Anyway, guys, enjoy the rest of your...
Very, very kind of you, Dave, to offer to buy us all a meal in drinks. Estimation.
Yeah, no, happy to do that. I'm quite happy.
Well done.
We're off to the
Golden Arches.
Yeah. Have a great weekend and have a great summer. But obviously, we'll be talking and probably find we'll be in a pod in 10 days' time because there's been a lot happening off the pitch. But enjoy the rest of your weekend, guys.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Cheers, everybody.